that would reach out and embrace countless thousands of men and women, even millions around this continent, who need you so very desperately and who lack the confidence and the experience that we've just sung of. So help us now, Lord. Help me as I share. Help all of us as we concentrate. Lift our eyes up to the harvest and help us to see our part in it and to play our part in it. For we ask in the name of the Lord Jesus. Amen. Well, we've thought together during these days, and Lorna shared with us, and as we've heard testimonies, we've thought about what it means to be a labourer, to put our roots down into the Lord, what kind of person we need to be. We've thought about always abounding in the work of the Lord. And we thought about how we function as a team in what the Lord has called us to do. And I want to move the focus, at least initially this morning, away from us and think about the task that we're facing in the Navigator work in Africa. But I want you to think about it keeping in mind what we've said, because we're going to talk about the aim, for instance. We're going to start, I would like to start by just reminding you of the aim of the Navigator work in Africa. It's to multiply, to help fulfill the Great Commission by multiplying labourers in every nation. So when we think about Africa and the Navigator work in Africa, we're thinking about to helping to fulfill the Great Commission in Africa. And of course we're thinking not about the next generation or 100 years from now, we're thinking about our generation. To help fulfill the Great Commission in Africa in our generation, by multiplying labourers in every nation. And internationally, we've spent quite a bit of time in the Navigator work in the last few years discussing what we mean by nation. Because the word in the Bible means more than just countries. It means peoples. And there's some talk in the Navigators about thinking about our aim, thinking about nation in our aim as meaning every group of people over 1 million. Now, the only reason for limiting it to those groups of people that are over 1 million in number is because otherwise it becomes so huge that one can't sort of get any handles on it. But in terms of planning, the thought is, let's think about groups of people over 1 million. So we'd be aiming then to multiply labourers in every one such nation on this continent, in our generation, thus helping to fulfil the Great Commission. Now that's quite a challenge, isn't it? We've actually, at the moment, as far as the work in Africa is concerned, we haven't got further than thinking in terms of countries. And I think it's right for us at this stage to think in terms of countries, because the biggest obstacle that we're experiencing at the present time to the spread of our contribution is the political boundaries between countries, rather than the tribal or linguistic boundaries between nations in that broader sense. Okay. So I'd like to just try and unpack for you a little bit how we're thinking, how I'm thinking, and how the others of us involved in the leadership of the work in Africa are thinking about the fulfilling of this aim on this continent in the next 20 or 30 years. Okay? Because presumably by the time 20, 30, 40 years have gone past, other people are going to be thinking about how to do it in their generation. Our challenge is how to do it in our generation and to lay proper foundations, of course, for those who will come after us. But I think to think in these big terms only makes sense and is only really motivating if we keep it linked strongly with Stanley's testimony, with the song we've just sung, with the things we've been thinking about over the last few days. And we think about real people coming to know Christ in a personal way and experiencing Him transform their lives and change them and change their homes and their families. And we think of ordinary people growing deep in the Lord and getting to know the Bible and being able to share Christ with their friends and neighbors. And we think about laborers at that individual, personal level. And it's such people that we're thinking about multiplying. And when we make our plans and we talk big and we dream dreams, we've got to keep it rooted in that practical, personal level. Okay? So, we're trying to plan then to multiply such labourers in every nation, and in doing so to help fulfil the Great Commission. Now that has in the first place a sort of geographic element to it. So let me just talk about the geography a minute. I don't need to draw a map of Africa. You know what Africa looks like. 5 years ago, when we first started trying to write a plan for Africa as a whole, I think Doug Sparks had earlier written a plan in the early 70s, but it had sort of fallen into disrepair because of the sheer problems of coping with what was happening, the leadership changes in Kenya, and trying to get the work started in Ghana and Nigeria, and all the frustrations and difficulties. All of our sort of energy, creative energy, was taken up there. And in fact, I think Lorne would share with us that there were even questions about whether we should even try and continue, whether we should continue in Ghana and Nigeria. The problems were so great. And I'm sure that Esther and Sarah and Stanley would be able to give testimony to some of the traumas of the work that the worker in Kenya went through, with all the leadership changes in the early and mid 70s. So we sat down again, went to our knees again, and looked to the Lord again in the early 80s for a fresh insight into how we should see this work spread and grow. And I remember Dave Hall and Bruce Van Wyk and Marv Smith and George Sanchez and I meeting at Naivasha in 1981, October 1981, and sharing where we were in the ministry in Kenya and Nigeria and Ghana, and committing ourselves to pray that over the next 5 years, God would enable us both to nationalize, if you like, the works in Ghana and Nigeria and Kenya, that was, you know, we should move strongly in that direction, and that we should enter a new phase of expanding into other countries in Africa, trying to plant the Navigator work in many, many new countries, or as many as we felt we could manage. We didn't really know, I don't think, how many. I think I had in mind sort of maybe 5 or 6 more, or maybe 3 or 4 more, I don't know. And I was asked at that time to take on the challenge of leading the total work in Africa for the next 10 years. That was October 81. And so we concentrated on that. And I think, as you know, you're probably aware of some of what's happened. You know pretty much what's been happening in Kenya. You know what's been happening in Ghana and Nigeria. And I think you know something of what's been happening in terms of getting the Navigator work planted in other parts of the continent. We started out by thinking, now what kind of resources can we expect in terms of new missionaries and so on? What kind of resources did we have available to plan the work? And we felt, with the resources we thought we had available, that it would be realistic to open the work in 3 new countries. And we looked at the map of Africa and we thought, now where should we go? Well, we decided that we didn't have anything in the southern part of the continent, and that should be a priority. We also recognised that we didn't have anything in French-speaking Africa, and since there are, I think, something like 18 French-speaking countries in Africa, we decided that 2 of the new countries should be in French-speaking Africa. So we started sending survey teams and making visits, and some of you here were involved in that. I know Mutua, for instance, went to French-speaking Africa. Dennis, Peter Agwa, later Masharia, were involved in visits into southern Africa. And in the end, we identified Zimbabwe and Ivory Coast, and then we weren't sure about Cameroon or Zaire as being the three new countries that we would start or try to start launch works in. And I think you're aware of something of what's happened in those countries. Ivory Coast now, Bernie is there, Bernie and Joe, there's another couple with them, Dave and Cheryl Morris, Chris Platt, Liz McSporran, many of you have met, Pierre Tessier from Canada. Two other couples are planning to join as soon as they can get there with the language, Gordy and Margaret Nordstrom, and Mike and Karen Katecki. Gordy and Margaret already have French. Mike and Karen will need to learn French before they go. And they've had a struggle. It's been difficult. I think Bernie is tired. They've had more difficulties over registering the navigators than they expected. They've had more difficulties with the language than they've expected. And they've just had more difficulty in learning to do the ministry in that new environment than they expected. And it's been a tough and discouraging time. They've also had quite a lot of ill health. And I think there's an overall sense of the enemy not giving up lightly on his territory. And I'd encourage you to be praying for them. In Zaire, which is eventually where we've chosen to concentrate, Ron and Doris Weeks, that many of you met at the Africa Leadership Conference a year ago, are there holding on to what is a fairly lonely outpost in Kinshasa. And it's been a tough 3 years for them as they went as missionary associates and now they're missionary specialists, the difference being that they're now supported fully through the navigators rather than through the job that they were doing. And they're running a mission guest house in Kinshasa, and God has really used them to open up contacts with church leaders, which is the only way that we'll be able to get in. And Jean-Marc and Sylvie Gretia from Canada, from Quebec, have agreed to be the team leaders to open the work in Zaire when they move there early next year, so 1988. And we're praying for God to give them the right team to be with them in that. And then you're also aware of what's been happening in Zimbabwe and some of the difficulties that we've had. And now with Jean and Becky down there and with the gifts that you've been sending to them and so on, I know that, and I hope you're all of you praying for that team in Zimbabwe. And you've got a vested interest, you've got a stake in that work. Back it up with your prayers. They've also been having a difficult time with the visas, registration and setbacks of that sort, although the ministry, I think, is quite encouraging. So that was the sort of plan, and the idea was that those countries then would be the countries that we believe, with the resources that we thought we could get, that was what we felt we could do. But then we felt, you know, when you've got 5 loaves and 2 fishes, do you say, okay, with 5 loaves and 2 fishes we can feed 10 people, so would the rest of you please go home? Or do you say, no, there are all these people that need feeding. Let's see what more we could do with our 5 loaves and 10 fishes. And so we came up with this idea of not just of making sure we did a good job with those three countries, but then seeing what else we could do in less conventional ways of starting a navigator ministry. What can we do, for instance, by looking for people that we call missionary associates, people who just come out and try and get jobs in countries. They may not be navigator staff, they may not have had all the training they would like to have had. You know, let's just see what we can believe God for. Let's see if we can squeeze a few extra navigator staff out of the system who could lead teams of international trainees and missionary associates and anyone else we can get our hands on. And let's see what we can do in some other countries. And so I remember we were praying, Paul Kikule had been praying for years about restarting the Navigator work in Uganda, and he and I had talked a lot about that, and he and I visited Uganda together soon after we moved to Nairobi. And I was praying very much, Lord, show us someone who could lead a team into Uganda. And then I had a letter one day in the post from Jeff Steinke saying, is anybody thinking of doing anything about Uganda? Because Carla and I have been praying about it, and you know, we'd like to be part of that. Well, I contacted their supervisor in the US, and they said, no, there's no way that you can have Jeff and Carla Steinke. They're much too important to the work here in America for us ever to be able to let them go. Then I knew that they were the kind of people we needed for Uganda. And in a series of minor modern-day miracles, God worked it out for Jeff and Carla to come and eventually to move, and for Beersheba and Rachel to join them, for Paul and Eki to move back, for Jeff and Jay and Tim and Eric to come and dodge the bullets. Thank you, Eva. No, it's sorry. It's slaying in the spirit. I've never had anybody slain in the spirit before when I was... Please don't feel shy if anyone else is feeling that they want to fall to the floor. And then for George and Judy to come as well. And that's an example of what we'd like to see happen in other countries. And it's beginning to happen elsewhere. Another country where that's happening is in Zambia. I had a phone call one day from Marv Smith, who'd just been at a staff conference in the Midwest, in the US. And he said, do you have an interest in someone who wants to go to Zambia? Well, Masharia and Charlie had been taking some trips down there, and other people, and they'd said, you know, we've got to get someone into Zambia. In fact, the first group that went into Zambia went around sort of trying to meet people and ask about opportunities with the Navigators, and everywhere they went they said, oh, the Navigators, yes, your representative here is Hudson Zimba, isn't it? And we didn't know who Hudson Zimba was. But eventually we found Hudson. He'd been a student in a Nav ministry in Britain, and he'd gone back with a pile of the lost art of disciple making. And he'd gone back praying that God would use him to start a Navigator work in Zambia, and that God would give him 12 men who would become foundation men for the work in Zambia. Well, then this couple, Jeff and Gretchen Brotherton, Jeff got a Fulbright scholarship, which I don't know exactly what that is, but it's a pretty high-powered scholarship from the American government, to go and lecture at the University of Lusaka. He teamed up with Hudson, and now God has begun to bring others to join them. There's an IT just joined them. Jim Ennis, is that right? Does anybody remember? I think that's his name. And then there's Adrian's roommate from Newcastle has gone down. He's got a lecturing job at the University of Lusaka. He's gone down and joined them. Teresa Kalau had her work permit refused in Zimbabwe. She's gone up and joined them as well. So God is bringing together a little team in Zambia there. So this is the kind of thing that we see beginning to happen in answer to our prayers. And some other countries you could be praying about are Cameroon. We've got a lot of contacts. Some of you know that Akuri Kalu has been visiting Cameroon from Nigeria, and he and Stephen Danyam were there they took three conferences for Baptist pastors in West Cameroon last October, and God has opened up an unusual door of ministry for them. Bernie has also been visiting Cameroon from Ivory Coast, the French speaking part, and we're praying that God would give us a team of people, perhaps one Navigator area rep who could lead it, and then some missionary associates and some ITs and some anyone else who wants to come and join in the fun. Some of you met Malcolm and Liz McGregor a year ago at the leadership conference, and you perhaps have heard about this couple, Les and Diane Winslow, that Ober's just visited. They're in Ethiopia. Another Dutch navigator couple, who are missionary associates, I think with the World Health Organization, is that right, in Addis? God has begun to put a team together there, and if we had time, I'd ask Ober to stand up and share a bit about his recent visit to Ethiopia. You know, ask him, if you're interested and you want some prayer information about Ethiopia, get alongside Ober and ask him what's happening. It's very exciting, the doors that God is opening up for us there, as far as ministry is concerned. Then Tanzania. And we heard a little bit from David last night. Let's pray that God would bring together. I'm praying that over the next couple of years, God would bring together a strong team to really see this work in Tanzania get established and launched. And, you know, you from Kenya can have a part in this by your prayers and as you visit. And then Malawi. You remember Mvula, that Dennis and Bob Sparks invested in, who was out at Scott Theological College. He's back now. And I've had a couple of letters from him just describing the opportunities that he has. And we've been praying very much about getting someone alongside him. Dave and Susan Rice had their visas turned down in Zimbabwe. They've moved up to Malawi. But we had a phone call last week saying it looks very unlikely that they'll be able to stay in Malawi. And, you know, what that means, I just don't know. Martin Lewis will be visiting them soon. And trying to work out with them where they should go, what they should do, and what we should do about the opportunities in Malawi. So there are all kinds of things opening up, far, far more than I imagined. We've also got missionary associate in Niger, in Niamey, in Niger. Although we haven't been able to work out any way that we can keep in touch with them. I've just heard that another NAVTRAIN couple have accepted a post with SIM in Guinea. You know, Guinea has been one of the most closed countries in Africa, and it's one of the least evangelized countries in sub-Saharan Africa, because it's been Catholic in terms of any Christian influence, it's predominantly Muslim, and it's been very left-wing since about 1956. But it's just opened up. And SIM are sending a team in, and one of the first couples to go in will be Steve Longabaugh and his wife, who are NAVTRAIN people with a heart to multiply disciples, multiply labourers. So there are all kinds of opportunities. I probably even missed out some as I've been sharing them with you. Now, I find it very, very exciting. I find it exciting not because I love geography. I was never very good at geography at school. I gave it up early, as soon as I could. I find it exciting because I'm motivated about labourers and multiplying labourers. Because I'm aware, as you are, of the tremendous need that there is. And because much of what's going for Christianity on this continent is very shallow and superficial. And some of it is even off track. And I can see a generation of young people growing up in countries like Kenya turned off from the gospel because of what they see of Christianity. And what's the answer to that? What are we going to do about it? How do we feel responsible for the Great Commission in our generation? Do we feel the kind of concern that Nehemiah did when he heard about the walls of Jerusalem broken down and the people in trouble, and he devoted himself to prayer and fasting and then to going to be part of the solution to that need? I think it should touch us in that way as we hear and see about what's going on in this continent. And we know the tremendous opportunities, but we know the tremendous problems and difficulties. And if there are men and women in other parts of the world willing to make huge sacrifices and pay a great price to come and pour their life out on this continent, how much more should those of us who live here already and for whom this is home be willing to pour ourselves out? And I'd just like to... That's a sort of a geographic overview. Let me share a little bit about then the goal of the ministry in a country. What are we trying to do when we send a team in? What are Jeff and Carla and George and Judy and Veershima and Rachel and Jeff and Tim and Eric and Paul and Eki trying to do in Uganda? Well, I was in here this morning when they came to light the fire. You know what they did? Put a few logs in there and tried to light it, and then they poured a whole bit of paraffin on it. And then they threw the match in and boom, you know, the thing took off. Now, what was the goal of pouring paraffin? Is the chap going to come in every quarter of an hour and pour paraffin on it? No, the paraffin is to get the logs on fire. That's the idea. You know, why do we send a missionary team into a country like Uganda? Not because we want to keep on sending missionaries forever, but because we want to, some logs, some Ugandan logs to catch fire. Because if the work is going to multiply and reproduce, it has to become a Ugandan something. It has to be Ugandans catching fire from other Ugandans. Now, there's nothing wrong with pouring some paraffin on to get it going. You know, I'm a sort of Boy Scout purist, you know. We have to start our fire by rubbing the sticks together. I don't think we have to do that. We can send some missionaries in and pour a bit of paraffin, and you know, we can do some things to try and speed it up and get it going. But ultimately, it's got to catch fire there in Uganda. It's got to be Ugandans who grasp the vision and own the work and believe the promises and give themselves to multiplying labourers. Doesn't it? And that's what we're praying for. So as you think about some of these countries I've mentioned where the work is going, what are we praying for? We're praying for a foundation generation of labourers and young leaders who would own the work and give themselves to see it multiply. Does that make sense? And then what about when a work gets into the stage that the Kenya work is in now, when that's happened? Where you do own the work, it's your work. And what happens now depends on your faith and your faithfulness. Well, I think part of the challenge now is how are you going to see it multiply in the country? You see, broadly speaking, in Africa, one of the things that's really helped us is there exists in Africa this sort of what you might call a supra-culture. I mean, it's almost like the Mediterranean world of the first century, isn't it? Where there was this Greek culture superimposed all over the Mediterranean area on the tribal cultures that existed underneath. And so the gospel was able to spread very quickly through that Greek superculture. Now, that's a bit like Africa. There's an English-speaking and a French-speaking, there are two, really, cultures that lie sort of over the surface of the continent. And of course, in other parts, it's Portuguese. Now, this is the way I think about it anyway. The task of these missionary teams is to penetrate into that culture, that cultural overlay. It's much, much easier, for instance, for a Dave and Sherry Hall to get to know a Sarah or an Esther or a Stanley and meaningfully communicate the vision and get such people into the world than it is to go out into the rural areas and have to learn Luya or Kikuyu and make all the huge adjustments in lifestyle and approach to see the ministry run in a rural setting. So we've deliberately chosen in our Navigator ministry to focus first on those English, that English speaking and French speaking sort of part at that lies on the surface, if you like. Now I think you, as Kenyans, you've got to grapple with how do we take this that we've learned and that we've received and that we now own, and how do we see that multiplied down into our society so that labourers are really multiplied, the kind of labourers who can labour effectively for a lifetime in Kenya and who can really multiply in this society, in this context, so that we really are contributing to the Great Commission. Do you know the passage? And they were discussing, and Jesus said, they were discussing the fact they'd forgotten to bring any bread, and Jesus said, beware of the leaven of the scribes and Pharisees. And what did they say? It's because we didn't bring any bread. It's a typical sort of subjective response, isn't it? You know, it's because we have no bread. Aware of their discussion, Jesus asked them, why are you talking about having no bread? Do you still not see or understand? Are your hearts hardened? Do you have eyes but fail to see and ears but fail to hear? And don't you remember, when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of pieces did you pick up? 12, they replied. And when I broke the 7 loaves for the 4,000, how many baskets full of pieces did you pick up? 7, they answered. And he said to them, do you still not understand? Now what's Jesus trying to get home to them there? What is he trying to teach them? Why such a strong rebuke over just the fact that they hadn't brought any bread? Well, he wasn't rebuking them that they hadn't brought any bread. He was rebuking them for what? The fact that they were worried about the fact that they hadn't brought any bread. That they were discussing that they had no bread. Now why rebuke them so strongly for that? Shouldn't they have remembered to bring the bread? I puzzled over that. This is one of the strongest rebukes in the New Testament. At least in terms of a physical situation. You know, seeing someone actually rebuke someone else. Now why? Well, I think it's this. I think it's because Jesus knew there were going to be countless thousands of situations from Matthew 28, 19 and 20 on, when these same men would forget to do things, would fail to do things, wouldn't have enough. And that if they got to any one of those situations and thought, oh, well, we can't do it. Now we must stop because we can't do any more. Then the whole thing would just bog down right there. And Jesus wanted them to remember the feeding of the 5,000, the feeding of the 4,000, because he wanted them to remember this situation. He wanted to make sure it was firmly implanted on their mind so that they never got in a situation where they thought, now we can't do it. Now this is too big for me. Now I failed, or now I forgot to do this. This is hopeless. And we better give up. Faith is so vital to what we're doing. I was having a conversation with one of you yesterday about this. You know, have you ever noticed that the main thing that God wanted Abraham and Sarah to do, to contribute to the Great Commission, was to have a son? And Sarah was uniquely qualified by being barren. So the very thing that God wanted them to contribute as a couple was impossible for them. You want to think about that? You see, what we have to contribute is not our own natural gifts and abilities. It isn't what you can do. It's what you can't do, but you're going to believe God for. That's the greatest thing you can contribute to this navigator work in Africa. It's not what you can do, but what you can't do, what you know you can't do, but you're going to say on the basis of God's promises, I'm going to believe God to do that through me. And nothing will be able to stop you. Take yourself seriously. believe God for what He can and will and wants to do through you. Because this job that we've set ourselves to do is way beyond any of us. And if we falter in believing God, and we start to look and think and talk among ourselves about the fact that we have no bread, we won't do it. If we start concentrating on the fact that we have no money, we won't do it. If we start focusing on the fact that we don't have sufficient training or staff or anything other than the Lord and His promises, then we won't do it. But if we can believe Him and believe His promises and be men and women of faith, then I think we'll find that nothing will be impossible to us. And I'm not looking to the Lord for miracles of healing. Or I had someone ask me after I spoke in Nigeria one time, why didn't I call any sick people forward for healing? Because he felt I was obviously a powerful preacher and he thought that I should do that. I'm not against people performing miracles of healing. But I know what miracle I want to see happen. I want to see the miracle of God allowing us to contribute significantly to the fulfilling of the Great Commission in our generation by multiplying labourers in every nation on this continent. And if God does that miracle through us, that's sufficient for me. If He wants to do some other miracles, fine too. But that miracle, I'm serious about. And I believe that's the miracle that God wants to do through us. And I believe we should trust Him for it. And it will be a miracle. And it'll take faith. And it'll take faithfulness. It'll take the faithfulness to stick at what we're called to do. And I've got another whole sermon on that, but I'll let you off that one. But you can find it by just reading 2 Corinthians chapter 4. That's the do not lose heart chapter. Having this ministry by the mercy of God, we do not lose heart. Faithfulness. Faithfulness to stick at what God's given us to do. Thank you. Let's have a word of prayer, shall we?